And now it's time for Southern California's sports fishing voice. Let's Talk Hookup. For the next 2 hours, join Pete Gray, Rock Cod Rick Mexa, Corey Sandin, and this week's special expert guest for fishing information, new techniques to catch more fish, and the most current scoop on what's happening in the water. Let's Talk Hookup is sponsored in part by Royal Polaris, the world's finest long-range sports fisher. By Ford, the official truck of Let's Talk Hookup, and Shimano Rods and Reels. Fish with the best, Shimano. Get ready for the fastest 2 hours on radio with the hosts of Let's Talk Hookup, Pete Gray, Rock God Rick Mexa, and Corey Sandin.
Good morning, anglers, and welcome to Let's Talk Hookup, man. Do we have a great show for you today? Pete is starting our Katmai adventure up north in Alaska. Going to be a great trip for him, and then Corey and I are standing by with what is going to be a very, very fun and informative show. A great buddy of Let's Talk Hookup, Mike Shane from Hub SeaWorld Research Institute. We're going to be talking all kinds of great info, sea bass and hatchery and halibut and calicos and the whole nine. It's going to be a lot of fun with one of our, a guy that really knows a whole lot about it. It's going to be a lot of fun. You stay tuned. You're having a Let's Talk Hookup with Mike. It's Let's Talk Hookup on Southern California Sport Fishing Voice, the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
The name that stands out among anglers is Fisherman's Landing, your top choice in local and long-range fishing. Hi, this is Doug Kern. Our hard-working crew will make sure your fishing experience is one to remember. We offer the finest open party trips from 1 to 3 days, the best charter boats available, and of course, our world-renowned long-range fleet is second to none. Fisherman's Landing is a full-service operation offering great half-day trips on the Dolphin and full-day open party trips on the spacious and comfortable Liberty. Since we introduced the full-day trips at Fisherman's Landing, the 85-foot Liberty has become a favorite among full-day operations with bunks for your comfort, huge bait capacity, and RSW fish holds to keep your catch fresh. Plus, Liberty has a big modern galley and two interior heads with showers. All our open party trips from half-day, full, or 1 to 3 day trips can easily be booked online at fishermanslanding.com or give us a call at 619-221-8500. I'll see you at Fisherman's Landing in San Diego.
This is Bob Hoos at Costa Sunglasses. Visual signs are a critical part of my fishing program, from bay bass to bluefin. I wear Costas to see what's out there. Costas are built with advanced polarization technology with our 580 lens, designed to cut through the sun's glare while providing enhanced color to see more fish. Costa was founded by a group of anglers wanting a high-performance lens for every fishing application. Costa has a West Coast-style frame and lens for your adventures. CostaSunglasses.com.
All right, welcome back to Let's Talk Hookup. And Rick, this is one of those shows I always dive deep into, man, all the information. And
yeah, cool. Always fun having Mike Chain from Hub SeaWorld in here. And man, not anybody that's got better info than what's going on than Mike. Good morning, stoked to have you back.
Good morning, thank you guys. I really appreciate the opportunity to come in here and talk to you and your listeners about what's going on with our organization and our programs.
Well, we're stoked to have you too, and especially this time of year. Like, it's summertime and, you know, bluefin and offshore and everything is happening. But, boy, it's the busy time for you guys at Hubs, too. Like, this is when kind of everything in your program is happening at once. I mean, you guys are year-round on the fish, but you get it from all angles right now.
Yep, all angles. Summertime is our busy time, and we're obviously, with regards to the hatchery and producing white sea bass, this is go time for us. I mean, we're setting eggs right now and got a lot of little babies running around there with the goal of, you know, getting those fish into grow-out pens later this fall and then eventually releasing them next year. So really the production run sets us up for success for the following year that's going on right now. We're also, and talk more about this, but the head collection efforts trying to, you know, continue research on what's going on out there, looking at the genetics of our fish and tags, et cetera, trying to understand that. So we're scrambling, running around, getting heads from different landings, markets, et cetera. So that's, we're going.
You're jumping.
Yeah.
We had a lot of fun talking, and I believe it was earlier in the year, maybe towards the latter part of last, but there was revelation is the right word, but in terms of head collection, there was talk about how the percentages were lower because only X amount of heads scanned had the tag, but then through genetic research found out that basically that the program was as successful as we all knew it was, that the outside, you know, just from looking at the raw data points, it maybe, you know, there was only X amount of, you know, return, but then through genetics research, you realize, like, this program contributes an incredible amount to our fishery.
Yeah, so let me just give an update on that and what's happening to your listeners and you guys. But so back in before the start of COVID, we had decided to, you know, we had the same kind of questions. You know, obviously getting the tag return rates that we were seeing, you know, one in every about 300 heads that we would scan had a tag in it. But we suspected, you know, I don't know, maybe fish were losing the tags, other things may have happened. And so we worked with some collaborators in South Carolina who do this as long as we've been doing enhancement work, and they're genetics experts and have labs designed for this. So we provided samples to them of all our brood stocks so they could basically fingerprint and know all our fish that we've had since 1995, at least in the hatchery in Carlsbad. Once they had that information, we provided them the otoliths or the stones, the pearls, you know, in the head that they can use to actually, their bones, but they actually were able to pull genetics off of their genetic material off of those otoliths by soaking them in solution. So they randomly picked a bunch of otoliths that we had already saved. Most of them were, or all of those were juvenile fish that came from my own field sampling over the years. So out of those juvenile fish, you know, we knew that about 7% of those had tags in them, so mm-hmm. but they were blind to that. They didn't know. They came back after doing the initial analysis and said it's more like four times that amount. So they found wow. you know, about 28%. However, you know, subsequently, you know, this was a master's thesis student's work, and so there's been some review, independent reviews looking at it. We're trying to work on publishing a paper and trying to refine those numbers.
That's awesome.
So,
sure.
You know, maybe coming down a little bit, but as we work through some of the, you know, details of that. And we're continuing to do that work. So now we have just received some federal funding. We're going to look at the adults now, the little juvenile fish. So now let's see if that same sort of trend holds in the wild, in the adult fish. So we've been saving more heads the last few years. Started last year, we saved all those heads. They're currently still sitting in the freezer because what we plan to do now is a multi-pronged approach, not just looking at the genetics, but we're going to see if they come back and tell us, hey, this head was tagged. We didn't detect it, what's going on.
Right.
Genetically, they identified it. This was a hatchery fish. So we can then take that head, and then we're going to plan to X-ray that head and look to see, well, can we see see the small tag in the head? We're going to look to see if we could see it in there. And then kind
did
of
the tag move? Did
exactly.
The, did just
yeah.
the natural, you know, the body when it's trying to, you know, heal itself, did it push it out? I mean, you know, we've all had a splinter or a fish spine, and we push it out. You know what I mean? Like, there's so many things. Now, will genetics tell if a... You know, if a Hubs hatchery born female fish, which has a tag, but then spawns offspring in the wild, and then that fish grows up and gets caught, will genetics tell us if that fish was related to the hatchery?
Yeah, fortunately not.
We've
had many of those discussions. We asked that, and we know that the fish that we're releasing are obviously reaching such a maturity. We know they're spawning out there, but unfortunately the genetics gets a little bit too complicated to be able to look at what you call F2s or F3s, you know, future generations.
Yeah.
So look at that. The other thing, just to mention quickly, that we're doing with those this fish is otoliths is also to just kind of corroborate the genetic results. Is you can take those otoliths stones, and we're collaborating with some folks down in Mexico that can take a chemical look at the chemical composition right in the core or the center of the otolith, and look at the what they call the stable isotope ratios for oxygen, pretty much carbon, and detect a hatchery reared fish that way. Because obviously they're spending the first 4 months or so in the hatchery eating diets that we provide them from manufacturers.
Oh, okay.
Different than a wild fish would eat. So that creates a different chemical composition. So we can then use those results in addition to the genetics to say, you know, if there's any questions with the genetics, we can go, well, here's what the isotope kind of showed us. And, right now we're currently working to develop and make those chemical composition isotope
How
more
cool.
robust. So,
yeah.
So the isotopes, I mean, just to help understand, are like tree rings. Like you can look at the tree rings and see what the diet was in the earlier rings, like would be on a tree.
Yeah, so it's not, for what we're focusing like on that first. I mean, we can take a sample small enough in the first 3-4 months of their life. So even 2 months, I think we're going to get it down to 2 months.
Wow.
So that means you've got to get right in the center of that core, take a small center section that's about 1 or 2 millimeters in length out of that, and then create that and run it through machines that
amazing.
Show you the especially the carbon ratio. That's what seems to be the different part of that. Yeah. And so you get a cloud of points of the data basically on a carbon scale and say, here's a cloud of points from hatchery fish are different from the cloud of points that are wild fish. So then you can go, okay, yeah, this is a difference.
That's awesome.
It's a true fingerprint. I mean, you can read that definitively.
Yeah. A little more effort, more time.
Sure.
You just scan it for a tag, but and cost, obviously, but yes.
Well, that's great. And I think we were just really excited to hear. I mean, I think we all know. I'm a huge believer in the program. I know how much good it does. There is no denying that, you know, millions of fish put back into our fishery makes a huge difference for it. And I know that there's plenty of other factors there, too, that we've got good environmental conditions. We've got no gill nets on the beach. I mean, I know that everything adds to it. But I also know that this is a fantastic program that works really hard and puts a lot of fish back into the water for us.
Yeah, and it's unique in the sense of the how the program operates and the various volunteers and people involved with the program. I mean, nowhere to our knowledge around the world does it involve such a large cooperative effort to do this. It's not just us, Hub Zero Research, doing this, but it's a collaboration also with CCA, the Coastal Conservation Association, and all these volunteers that are helping us release fish at a larger size, getting, you know, hopefully to get over through some bottleneck of recruitment and getting larger fish out there to hopefully reach the fishery and survive better. So it's really, you know, a great partnership amongst all the people and organizations to do this, where, you know, you talk about most stock enhancement programs around the country even are just releasing fish, you know, at maybe a month, 2 months in age and putting them out there. And it's usually their departments of natural resources or fish and wildlife folks that are doing those efforts there. California is different, where we've been the sole contractor to the Department of Fish and Wildlife to operate this program for 35 years or since the inception of the program. So
it's been fun getting to watch the program evolve too. You know, like we're just part of the public, but we all feel like we're involved. You know, whether you're in an angling club or you see the grow out pen or you donate a head to it. And even though, you know, I don't have anything directly to do with it, I still feel like we're part of it. We get to hear, you know, from you on the radio show on the weekends and about how it is and how it's evolved, and, you know, and because things have changed, because there wasn't always grow out pens, and there wasn't always, like, you guys are just always adaptive to make the program the best it could possibly be. It's very fun to watch.
Yeah, thank you. So it's, yeah, definitely, you know, it's not a cookbook process yet. Even we've been doing this for 30 some odd years, I can't just say here's what you do to go grow sea bass and create an effective enhancement program. We do have, you know, ideas, and we have created a roadmap for success, and we just need to get the funding and get some goals and some things set up to say, okay, well, we know how to do this at least now that we can, you know, given some direction and goals from the department and the science advisory committee, you know, how can we make this program an even greater success?
What's the life cycle like for you guys creating a hatchery raised sea bass? I mean, we always hear you talk about the brood stock, but like, what's the cycle like? When does it happen and how long, and when do they go to the pens and release and all that? Like, what's the start to finish like for one that gets kicked out the door?
Yeah, it's very intensive, especially the first month, you know. So right now, you know, we've got eggs that, you know, when the spawn occurs, you know, we'll look at that quality of that spawn. Is it a good spawn to set up? And, you know, what's the viability? That is, how good, what looks like the amount are fertilized, et cetera. Those eggs then, okay, this is go time, and we'll use this spawn. And we know based on genetics possibly how many fish females may have contributed to that spawn. So we'll set up a number of eggs, you know, for example, if one female contributed a certain amount of eggs versus we just had a spawn yesterday that we set up that four females contributed to it. So that's a huge spawn for us. And so we set those eggs up in tanks according to, you know, 50 eggs per liter or in the water. And so depending on how many liters are in the tank, those eggs gently go through the water and roil around, move around. And so after about 2 days, they start hatching. So that's considered day zero right there,
okay,
2 days later. So they start hatching out about a day or a couple days later. Then we start adding live feeds. And live feeds for us are sea monkeys or Artemia. So that's what we feed them. Enriched Artemia, they get, you know, Artemia, like any invertebrate, goes through various stages of development. So we feed them what's called the first or second instar, the Artemias. And so for the first at least 3 weeks, they're getting this Artemia. and that's enriched with nutrients, and we feed them throughout the day, different, you know, add them a couple, three or four times a day. This food goes in there to keep them getting good diets. At about 3 weeks, 2 weeks, we start to then to try to wean them onto what's called dry pellets or feed, you know, mm-hmm. and it's their micro diet. So they have feed now. The technology has improved in this area greatly that these small, looks like salt and pepper flakes.
I was going to say, because this thing is hatched days or weeks ago. I mean, it can't be.
Yeah, their mouths aren't very big. So, basically.
Cool.
And then from there, once we've got them weaned, you know, it's kind of game over. That usually happens by the end of the first month. And then the food size and the pellets just get bigger and bigger as they grow.
So. Now, are they still in the same pen with their, tank, or I don't know how it works with the big fish that spawn them?
No, we don't put them in there. I mean, they come into separate tanks. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we have separate larval rearing tanks.
Okay.
They spend about the first 30 to 50 days in, roughly, before we then move them out of those tanks because they're growing and the tanks, you know, are getting too small for them. I mean, so we move them over into bigger tanks where they then can get even bigger and they get to the 3-inch size, roughly, inside the hatchery in those tanks. At that point, once they reach about 3 to 4 inches in size, we can then tag them. Actually, about that size, about 90 days.
So you're placing a tag in a fish that's only 3 inches long.
Yeah. Exactly.
Wild.
Yeah,
so,
and 90 days right there.
Yeah, yeah.
Amazing.
So we're tagging all those, and then they go from there. They leave the indoor comfort of the hatchery and go outside into our outdoor tanks, which are flow-through seawater in those tanks. Everything on the inside of the hatchery is what we call recirculating aquaculture. So we're controlling. It makes it easier for us to control the temperature and the lighting in the tank and that kind of stuff, making it ideal for them. So it's the Goldilocks time inside inside the hatchery.
So is that happening at the Hub SeaWorld area, or is that at the Carlsbad?
That's
at
Carlsbad. So Carlsbad. I mean, we do that work as well, or can do other. We're working on yellowtail and halibut at the Mission Bay facility, but you know, one of the crops that we're working on right now, we actually did start at Mission Bay in January and then transferred those fish up to Carlsbad when they were about 50 days old, 60 days old. So, and just for resource purposes, we had to do that down there. That was a setup on January where those fish spawned on Super Bowl Sunday. So, getting excited for the game, I guess. After they're tagged, then they go outside and they spend another couple weeks in there. We're just checking tag retention. And then they get, before they leave to the grow out sites, they get a health inspection by the department's pathologist, looks at them, gives his blessing, and then we can deliver them to the various grow-out sites, and that'll usually in the fall, October, November time frame, get them set up for the winter grow-out.
That's awesome.
What amazing
work,
right?
I know. It's so cool, Mike.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, it's awesome.
And it's such a huge contribution to everything we love, right?
Totally.
I mean, it's everything we love. Sea bass and
you guys always have us anglers, we're part of it, you know, whether it be drop off of heads, whether it be, you know, fundraising, whether it be contributing broodstock. I mean, you guys do such a good job of involving the angling public and never afraid to ask for help. Hey, we're trying to get some halibut. We're trying to get some sea bass. We need more heads, whatever it might be. I think that's one of the things that I like so much about the program is, you know, it's always transparent. It's always for us, and it's always like including the angling community go along with it.
Yeah, I mean, just going thinking about, you know, how many times since the 30, 35 years we've been doing this program, the angling community that and sports fishermen in particular that we've relied on to support and help us with this program, whether it is actually out there collecting fish, saving heads for us, running them, driving them down, you know, their grow out sites, and, you know, CCA providing the insurance for those grow out sites. And including even, you know, legislation when things need to occur politically. And
totally.
It's been the sport, the recreational side, helping to drive that process. In addition to, obviously, raising the funds for this, because when you fish in the ocean, your ocean enhancement stamp is what goes to the department. They manage those funds, and that's what we get money from to operate this program.
That's awesome. I love it. Man, just going to be such a great show, Corey. I know you know the same. Like, just there's... It's just a different level of information with a guy like Mike Shane here today. I can't wait. It's going to be a lot of fun.
I get geeked out on it, honestly,
totally.
Right? And so, Mike, you have a gala coming up, September 21st.
Yeah, so this is our 60th year. You know, our founding fathers started us the year before they, while they were building the park, so the year before SeaWorld opened, They built our organization with, you know, the mission to return to the sea some measure of the benefits derived from it. And that's always been us moving forward. And we specialize in that and do that sort of research in about five different core areas in our organization. And we've just been talking about the sea bass, which is our sustainable seafood, comes under the umbrella of our sustainable seafood program. But, you know, we also focus in areas of wildlife populations, ocean health, animal behavior, which is kind of acoustics and sound in the water. So, you know, we do a lot of research on all these areas. And so for 60 years, you know, we've been doing this work. And so it's time to celebrate this year. Our 60th anniversary will be held, that gala, on September 21st. It'll be in the park at SeaWorld.
How cool.
That's awesome.
You could go to the park, go to our website and support and come to the event by buying some tickets and supporting our organization that evening.
And how much are the tickets?
The tickets, I believe, are around $150.
Roughly. So, and that'll, there'll be animals and all this stuff included, but here's the cool part. We're giving away two tickets today,
Two of those
tickets are going to one lucky caller or texter to that gala September 21st, held at actual SeaWorld in the park.
Yeah.
And let me throw one in, too. Nobody puts on a show like you guys do at Hubs and SeaWorld. I mean, it's a very cool event.
You know how I know? Because Rick and Dallas are going, right?
Exactly.
So if you want to come and be a part of it and be, you know, be a lucky caller.
Totally. Come join us.
It's all yours. And telephone number is 213-432-1090. Or you can text us via the app, only through the app. It's done through there. Make sure you leave your name and your telephone number, a way to contact you if you are the lucky winner. We're going to have Mike at the end of the show flip a coin. All this cool information, Rick. I can't wait for the fish reports, man. The tuna fish.
Happening.
Dude, I saw a dorado in the count, too, man. We got some fun fish reports. Mike, Shane, all this cool information. We're going to be right back on the Let's Talk Hookup app, the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Are you passionate about fishing and the great outdoors, but not quite sure where to go? Look no further than Queen Charlotte Safaris in pristine British Columbia, Canada. Hello, this is Valerie Hopewich. There's so many reasons to join us on your next fishing adventure. A few of the highlights of fishing in protected, calm waters. Very important. Quality snook salmon run all season long. After you've caught your salmon, we're going to go out for the great Pacific halibut, lean cod, rockfish, and Dungeness crab. Our beautiful lodge overlooks Shingle Bay Sandspit, and it's so easy to get to. Fly from almost any airport into Vancouver and then on to Sandspit. Fish processing, your fishing license, your gear, all included. Just bring that fishing arm and that smile. Let our chef pamper you with amazing meals while our staff gives you wonderful hospitality, all included in your Queen Charlotte Safaris package. Give me a call on our toll-free number, 1-877-815-2892, or go to our website, qcsafaris.com.
For quality, the Islander out of Fisherman's Landing is a favorite among anglers. But Islander Charters is much more than great fishing. The quality of the captains and crew, as well as the great meals and service, speak for themselves. Comfortable staterooms, a super clean and well taken care of boat, are just a few of the reasons the Islander is so popular. The Islander specializes in 1.5 to 5 day fishing. Experience the Islander difference. Visit IslandersSportFishing.com.
There are plenty of boat slips and marinas in San Diego, but there's only one Kona Kai. It's not just a place to park your boat. It's a way of life here in America's finest city. The Kona Kai Resort Spa and Marina has multiple swimming pools and a private beach, waterfront restaurants, and award-winning spa, most of which is included for marina tenants. Check ResortKonaKai.com for more information. The Kona Kai Resort, much more than just a place to park your boat.
The lighter the bite and the cleaner the water means one thing. Need a thinner leader, more natural presentations. That's where Seaguar Gold Label leader material shines. It's Seaguar's thinnest leader material yet. That means it's even less visible underwater and creates more natural presentations for better catch rates on leader-shy fish. With exceptional knot and tensile strength, this advanced leader material is now available from 2-pound test for fishing trout in the Sierra to 80-pound test for big yellowfin in Guadalupe. Get Seaguar Gold Label at your favorite tackle dealer or learn more at Seaguar.com.
All right, good morning and welcome back to Let's Talk Hookup. And man, that intro, Rick, and all that information, and just having Mike Shane in studio is so just no other way to say it. It's badass.
Yeah,
you
totally.
Know, all the cool information. And I love it. I really do. And I know he's got some good information, maybe on kelp health and calicos even, you know, something I love doing. And
you guys, I know, have done a lot of work on other fish too, particularly yellowtail and sea bass and
halibut.
You know, we got to do a halibut. We got to do a tour one time at the Mission Bay facility and saw, you know, tanks with big yellows and halibut and things like that. So is that just for research sake? Is there plans for doing the same thing with sea bass for other species down the line, whatever they may be? Is it just for, you know, for knowledge for the back pocket? Like, I mean, I know you guys do a lot of cool stuff.
Yeah. So get to focus on the halibut initially. So California halibut, back when this or Ocean Resources Enhancement Program got started in the mid 80s, was actually a fish that was under the program. And so we were culturing those fish.
Okay.
There was another organization involved up in LA and they had the brood stock. And so we did some very small releases back then. And then over the years, the funding just, you know, there wasn't enough funding to do both species. So we just continued to focus on white sea bass. And then along the way, it kind of got lost over time with regards to, different changing people in the department, you know, not keeping up with what the history of the program. So myself and a couple others at the Institute, you know, obviously been around since the inception of this program, kind of had to remind them, look, you know, halibut. And so we've got private funding in the last few years to look at California halibut again and are trying to currently investigate tackle a couple of different problems with those. And one being, you know, just their sexual selection, in the sense that you can, in through culture work, you can actually, based on the temperature, if it's not right, again, there's a Goldilocks thing, just right, at the right time of their age, you can convert them to males.
Get out of here.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Halibut?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah. So we're trying to figure out what that sweet spot is, so that when we culture them, you know, we can make sure that we're trying to get at least a 50-50 ratio getting females out there. And that's important because, as we know about climate change and the oceans are warming up, and this year looks like we've got a El Nino coming, but as oceans continue to warm, obviously we know that halibut will convert to males if it's too warm. It just in the wild, halibut may disappear because there's just no females left to reproduce. So that's
crazy.
Huge implications for us in the research that we're doing on halibut. So we're working on that, and as well as kind of making sure we can get the correct colors on the fish. I mean, they can be albinos in the culture and this and that, but you obviously need them dark on the eye side and white on the blind side. So we're working on that kind of stuff. And so we have done, as a couple of years ago, even did a few small pilot scale releases on these halibut in Mission Bay and had permission from the department to do that. And then when we kind of wanted to continue doing more releases, they kind of told us time out and said we want this to kind of come back under the ORHAP program, which is going to require dedicated funding for that too. I mean, so we're still continuing to do the research on halibut, but with the intent that if they give us the green light at some point, we get funding, we're ready to go.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
You're not starting over from scratch again.
Yeah.
This is so cool.
I would love to see, like, the $60 we spend on our annual fishing license, more than $3, $3.15 of that go to, because, I mean, currently, I mean, I'll stand on the soapbox for just a second, but I know that our fishing license money, other than that ocean enhancement, goes to the general fund of the state, right? I mean, I hate to get political, but I know that for years, and it's just going to potholes and going to the governor to do his agenda is kind of...
Yeah, I mean, we don't get 100% of those funds. I mean, your ocean enhancement stamp now is up to
615, I think.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, I was going to pull up my license and look at it. But, yeah, so they do take their administrative fees and other things. And they're actually supporting a couple positions at the department through this funding as well, like the administrator and I think part of the pathologist's time. So are covered under there. But it seems to be more of that money is being shifted over to the department. And we've actually been getting some supplemental funding from the Sports Fishing Restoration Act SFRA funds that help to support this, but
all in the right direction.
So, totally.
Yeah. Good.
Well, speaking of the direction, we're going to go in the direction of north by a whole long way. We got Pete on the line right now, starting off our big Katmai adventure with Katmai Lodge. Morning, Pete.
Good morning, Pete.
Hey, good morning.
Corey, Rick, and Mike, it sounds like a great show and lots of good information there, Mike. Sure appreciate your time and all your efforts of what you're doing, and I appreciate you guys being there so I can start this Katmai adventure, which we're doing today. I flew up to Anchorage. I'm in Anchorage right now. It's cloudy and looking like rain, but surprise, surprise. Welcome to Alaska,
yeah,
right?
What
you don't
shock.
Like the weather? Wait a minute. But we're looking, actually, this week, looking pretty good for the weather. So knock on wood, you can't predict the weather here in Alaska, but it looks a little dicey today getting into the lodge. We may have to fly into King Salmon, and then what happens is Bob comes and picks us up in the float plane, and then we transfer everybody from King Salmon, which is only like a 20-minute flight on the float plane, over to the lodge. What happens at the lodge is the gravel runway gets a little soggy if it rains, and they don't want to chance these 16-passenger twin prop planes, you know, sinking into the mud or something like that. So if there's any question whatsoever, we'll go to the King Salmon, but we won't know that till about 9:30 this morning when we start heading over there to the lodge. But we had a great flight up yesterday. Oh my gosh, with this high pressure, the California coast and the Oregon and Washington coast were just absolutely crystal clear and beautiful. So nice flight up. But most of what I wanted to do this morning, other than thank you guys for being there, was throw out a huge get well soon to our good buddy Gus from Burbank, Gus Klein. He's in the hospital with a respiratory infection, and we're thinking of you, Gus, and we really want you to get well so you can get to that Queen Charlotte Safaris trip, which is our next trip that Corey and I are doing.
Gus is
under the weather, and he's a tough guy, though, but he'll come back strong. But it was tough to hear that Gus was in the hospital, but he's going to come back strong.
No doubt, man. Gus, we need you back on this one. Get well soon, buddy.
Yeah, for sure. But, hey, I'll report back to you guys next Saturday. We fly back to Anchorage next Saturday, and I'll probably use the sat phone from the lodge before we leave to Anchorage and give you the full rundown. I guess the sockeye are thick right now. The run is fantastic this year. So I know this afternoon we'll be getting a bunch of sockeye, and then the kings are in, and then probably toward the end of the week, the chum salmon will be in, and then, of course, those big giant Alaskan trout that I want to go pursue. Hopefully those will be cooperating too. But we'll give you the report next week, and you guys have a great weekend of shows, and great week, and thanks again, Mike, for all you do for us.
Great, thank you. Right. Appreciate it.
Steer clear of the brown bears up there, buddy.
Oh, yeah. No, that's part of the fun, right?
Pete, have a great trip. We'll look forward to the report next Saturday.
All right. Thanks very much. Get well, Gus.
Yeah, you feel better, Gus. That's awesome. We'll have a great trip. We'll look forward to hearing that. And, man, phones are packed up. Texts are rolling through, too. Corey, let's jump into the phones.
Yeah, for sure, Rick. And how about Matt? Matt Cohn from La Mesa. Good morning, Matt.
Hey, Matt. Thanks for getting us started.
Hey, good morning, guys. I'm just calling in with a fish report. Got out on the Pacific Dawn this week on a day and a half with Mike and all of his awesome crew. And thanks to my new outfit that I picked up from you, Ricky, I got a 71.5-pound bluefin on the knife jig. And then on the Therese rail rod with the Tac 20, thanks to Brandon in the tackle store with the Mustad Rip Roller 400-gram jig, I picked up a new personal best of 132.4-pound bluefin tuna.
Wow. Congratulations, man. There's a solid limit, a 70-pounder and a 130-pounder.
Right.
Yeah, so I'm getting those processed, and I'm going to pick them up today. And I was hoping to be on the leaderboard here of the Western Outdoor News Big Fish Challenge, but I've already been kicked to the curb by Shane. He got a 151 on the Tomahawk, but that's how fishing goes. So there's the incentive to get out there and maybe get another one here.
Matt, congratulations. You'll have to share with us what was the hot jig for you on your big fish? Or do you have to wait until after the tournament to tell us?
Well, that was a 400-gram Rip Roller knife jig.
Awesome.
And I was actually lucky to get the fish because when they put the gaffs in the fish and brought it over the rail, the jig fell out of the fish and the hook stayed in the fish. So somehow the fish worked the split ring off the jig and completely bent up the bottom of the jig But, you know, hey, fish on board, no harm, no foul.
That's so rad. Well, congratulations, buddy. That's an awesome fish and a stellar limit. I'm glad you had a good time in the Pacific Dawn and the tackle worked so well. Appreciate the phone call, Matt. Thanks very much. Good, nice going.
Thanks, buddy.
Yeah, cool report for sure. Hey, we got the Castman on hold. It's brought to us by Dana Landing on Mission Bay. It's your one-stop shop for everything you need to go fishing. A complete saltwater tackle shop, the full deli, snacks, beverages, ice, boating supplies, everything you need. And for the for your time on the freshwater, all the tackle you need, visit East County Bait and Tackle. And they have their new shop in Lemon Grove, too, Lemon Grove Bait and Tackle. All stores are fully stocked with the products you know and all the information you need for a successful time on the water. Dana Landing is right next to the launch ramp, right across from Hub SeaWorld right there, right, Mike?
Yep, drop off your sea bass head when you're there, too.
There it is, right there. Johnny or Steve will take them from you. I'm sure Steve will be stoked. Right across from SeaWorld right there on Mission Bay. And ECBT is at the end of the 67 Freeway at Mapleview and Lakeside. And Lemon Grove Bait and Tackle's on Broadway and Lemon Grove. For all this information, check danalanding.com.
I can almost guarantee Mike's walked across the street and got an Alexa sandwich or two in his day at the deli there at Dana Landing.
Yeah. Trying to cut back on the carbs, though.
Hey, well, we're going to find out what's going on down south and talk to the man, Richard Castaneda, standing by. Buenos dias, Cass.
Yes, man.
Hey, buenos dias, Ricky, Corey. Hope you boys are doing well.
Everything's great, buddy.
Hey, that's great. Hey, again. 400 gram knife jig. You know, it's almost a pound.
Right?
Jigging up and down. My God, that's a lot of weight.
It's a lot of weight until there's a 130 pounder attached to it. And then that weight just seems to magically go away.
Yeah, isn't that amazing? Not a problem whatsoever. But
you got it, buddy.
Anyway, we'll start off with Loretto. I just had some clients get back. Bo Hinke was down there with his group and reported the route of fishing was kind of slow, even though they did get some nice bulls and some of the smaller ones. But he said this week it was kind of slow. But he had looked like probably a 45, 50 pound Dorado that he had sent me a picture of. And plus they were also getting some of the bottom fish there, the Baqueta. And he said lots of skipjack being caught there in that area there. But so it's kind of a slow week, and basically it kind of seemed like it may have been a slow week all the way down to the very tip of Baja. Good reports I got from Bob Lewis there, Playita Bob from La Playita, he indicated that this week seemed really slow, that the Dorado bite had slowed. Basically no tuna except for the boats that are getting out 35, 40 miles and finding the porpoise. They are finding the tuna there. Some quality fish, you know, 40, 50 pound fish, but it just happened to be one of those weeks that it's really slowed down quite a bit. And but you know, that's fishing. Can't be good all the time, but even though we wish it would. But anyway, that's the report for this week. Corey, I just want to let you know that our listeners that we've got our El Salto trip, January 26th to 30. Anybody who wants to join us for the probably one of the top bass lakes in the world for largemouth bass. It's going to be a great trip as usual. You know, been known, I remember, I think the year before last, we had close to a couple of boats with 200 fish per day. So there's a lot of bass in that lake, and we always seem to hit it just about right. So anybody who wants to join us, join Corey and I trip, give me a call at 800-593-6510. Or you can check us out on the web at www.caststewards.com. And I'll talk to you boys next Saturday.
Yeah, good times for sure. And that El Salto you're talking about, it's in a cycle that is at its prime. Like, it was down for a number of years, Cass, and for four years, seasons, it's been high and a lot of water, and the spawn's been good, and there's a lot of mean, like 4 to 6 pounders just waiting.
A lot of hungry ones.
Right?
That's
I can't
how we
wait.
Like them.
January 21. I can't wait.
26
okay. 30.
All right. Thank you.
Cass, great report as always, buddy. Appreciate you taking care of us with what's going on in the Baja and more, and we'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good, boys. Talk to you next week.
Thanks, Cass, man. We'll talk to another guy that I know loves him some El Salto, and that's our good buddy Captain Frank LaPresse. He's on the line. Hi, Frank.
Good morning, Frank.
Hey, good morning, Rick. How are you guys doing?
We're doing great. I know your ears must have been burning a little bit here in a little El Salto talk.
I heard that. I just heard that. And I might also add that we have, with our guys at Fisherman's Landing, we have March 10th, April 10th, and May 10th, 4.5 days of fishing. So if anybody wants to go on any of those trips, all they got to do is contact Rick over at Fisherman's or contact me at our office. But I also want, the main reason why I called Rick was to let everybody know that the Royal Polaris schedule for 2024 will be up by noon today.
Oh, oh big news. Wow. Excellent.
And the Supreme and the Shogun will be up by noon on Monday.
Okay. Wow. That's a big deal. You know, we've talked, Frank, every time you're on the show, and, you know, we get it weekly that, you know, guys really want to go fishing with you and Roy. Guys really want to go fishing with Aliar. Guys really want to go fishing with Renee. And, you know, it's not easy sometimes to get on those trips. And this is it. You know, your opportunity of the new schedule coming out is happening right now. Frank, that's awesome news.
Right. Okay. Well, I'm sure that I hope it works out for everybody. There are, you know, there's a lot of charters, that's for sure. The office will not be open today or Sunday, but they can book online, and then obviously the office will be open at 8 o'clock Monday morning. I'm not going to be here because I'm going to be on the RP with John Ireland.
Oh, what a cool trip!
Now, are you driving this trip, or are you going as Frank the Fisherman?
I'm going to try to catch a fish.
That's cool.
Super cool.
Well, we're excited to hear about how you do with John, getting John on some fish. It's impressive you got him off of a cruiser and onto the Royal Polaris, Frank.
I think it's his first time ever. So, all right, you guys, take care.
Frank, great news. Appreciate it. Again, Royal Polaris schedule coming out today at noon, Supreme and Shogun Monday at noon.
Correct.
Awesome. And book a web. I think that was a really hot tip of being able to book straight on the website. You know, if you want to get your spot, that's it. Frank, great job. Appreciate it. Have a great time on the RP, and maybe have Roy give us a call next weekend. Let us know how the trip went.
It'll be Jonathan.
Okay.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Great job, Frank. Appreciate that very much.
All right. Hey, we're going to be right back on Let's Talk Hookup. More from Mike Shane and the Hub SeaWorld Research Institute. When we return on the Let's Talk Hookup app, the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Offshore fishing is on. Hi, this is Doug Kern from Fisherman's Landing Tackle, the saltwater tackle professionals. For bluefin tuna and yellowtail, nothing beats the Shimano Talica, the pinnacle of lever-drag two-speed reels. Shimano Speedmaster 2 is also an extremely durable, high-performance lever-drag reel for the more budget-minded angler. Both the Talica and Speedmaster 2 feature Shimano's Hagani body to prevent misalignment of moving parts under the heaviest of loads. For all your Shimano, visit us at Fisherman's Landing Tackle at Fisherman's Landing in San Diego.
This is Captain Art Taylor from Searcher Sport Fishing. Your hook is one of the most important links to catching fish. And at Searcher Sport Fishing, we use and recommend Gamagatsu hooks. The Gamagatsu Nautilus hook is best for tuna. And now with a variety of sizes all the way down to size 4, Gamagatsu hooks are the ones to use. It's important to be prepared with the right tackle when you come aboard Searcher, so that should include Gamagatsu hooks.
Seasoned long-range fishermen know that the Red Rooster 3 is the finest fishing vessels in terms of technology, design, speed, comfort, and safety. This 105-foot sport fishing yacht meets every demand for comfort while delivering an unforgettable fishing vacation. Captain Andy Cate and crew are experienced, friendly, and sincere in their desire to help you have the trip of a lifetime. Book a trip on the Red Rooster 3 and you'll be back. Trips go fast. So check RedRooster3.com or call Lee Palm Sport Fisheries at 619-224-3857.
It's time for the Power Pro 30-second seminar. I like catching big fish, and I like smaller reels, too. How do I make sure that I have the capacity to land the big one? I fill my reels with Power Pro Max Quattro. It's 25% thinner than standard Power Pro, so you get more line on that small reel. Power Pro has a complete series of highly effective lines, including the brand new Power Pro Depth Hunter Offshore, with different colors every 100 feet. Perfect for flatfall fishing. Want to learn more? Check PowerPro.com.
In San Diego, the future belongs to everyone. So Ford engineered the truck of the future for everyone. The Ford F-150. Available with a Pro Power onboard generator. What a great addition for anglers. There's also a variety of cab configurations for whatever you need to haul. The truck of the future isn't created for just a few. It's created for us who love the ocean and the outdoor life. Ford F-150. Test drive one at your local San Diego County Ford dealer today. They'll be glad to hook you up.
Hey, welcome back to Let's Talk Hook Up, and super cool show having Mike Shane in here from the Hub SeaWorld Research Institute, and we're giving away a couple tickets, Rick, to a gala happening September 21st.
Yeah, a couple of really cool events going on at Hubs and the SeaWorld Park. You know, the one preceding you guys is the big, you know, honoree dinner of Bill Shedd. CCA has honored Bill Shedd with the Anthony Shea Conservation Award, which is really CCA's highest award, and I mean, there is not a single person who's more deserving of a conservation award, in my opinion, than Bill Shedd. And, you know, we talk about AFTCO's contributions all the time, but they really talk the talk in addition to walking the walk. You know, those guys, it's one thing to be involved, but they are involved financially with their time, with their efforts, with their people. There's nobody that's more deserving of a conservation award, in my opinion, than Bill.
Yeah, and Bill has been, you know, he's a chair of our board for organization, has been so for a number of years, and has helped to support the Institute when we were going through some challenging times with some extra funding, et cetera, to keep us going. But obviously with the foresight of his father, you know, he's continued on in support of the organization to, you know, make sure the legacy continues and we keep moving forward. So he's, you know, he's great. And I mean, what he's doing, I know he's also being inducted to the IGFA Hall of Fame this year as well. And the other thing just to mention about, and we can talk about more of this later, but when you don't drop your heads off, especially for the private recreational fishermen, AFCO is giving away a $25 gift certificate to, you know, one per angler for the year, but between now and the end of August. So
I didn't realize that was a thing for this year. I knew that was before, and I thought that was such a cool idea. So run that again. If you drop off a head at one of the approved facilities, you're going to get an AFTCO $25 gift certificate to spend on their website.
For private recreational fishing, that turns in, or, you know, any private person that turns it in, but we need your contact information, and particularly an email, so when they drop off their heads between now and the end of August, I will provide that information to Bill, and Bill will make sure they get the, you know, email certificate for purchases.
That is so cool. Like, that's so cool.
Just another way that AFCO, their pledge, Rick, is what, 10% like minimum
of
that they give back. And how do we, Rick, how do we, that August 3rd deal at SeaWorld, for honoring such a gentleman, how do we get to
jump on the CCA website? It's super easy. CCA, the main, you know, so this is not a CCA, like, one of the reasons it works so well is there's the CCA National, which, you know, kind of encompasses everybody, including in Washington, and, you know, and having people speak on our behalf politically. And then CCA National is supported by the states, and then the states broken down into chapters. And, you know, there's chapters like San Diego and Orange County and South Los Angeles and Los Angeles and Inland Empire and all the way up and down the coast. So this is like the main CCA event, you know, the entire organization honoring Bill there. But you just jump on the CCA website. You'll see right away up on the front page, you know, where to get tickets to go to the event.
I'm so bummed to not be going, right, August 3rd, but super stoked to be going with Pete.
I bet you are,
Queen Charlotte Safaris, right?
Yeah, it's going to be fun. And, you know, you mentioned at the very beginning of the show, Mike, that's been, you know, that's kind of like, that was started with Milt Shedd, that, you know, their philosophy has always been, if we're going to make money from something, that we need to give back to it. And you kind of not glossed over it, but it's something that's very worth mentioning, that Hubs was started, you know, so Milt Shedd, Bill's father, was one of the founder of SeaWorld, and before the SeaWorld Park even opened its doors, Hubs was already running, and Hubs is funded from the park, and them knowing that, hey, if we're going to make money on marine life, we're going to give back to it, and it's been that way since since before the doors opened.
Yeah, I mean, it's been great to have that and have that ability, and even the facility that we're in right now, our headquarters, which is our Mission Bay, is a facility that's still owned by SeaWorld, or at least they lease it from the city for as well, the land of the park. But arranged a long-term dollar-a-year type of contract, and so they, when Anheuser-Busch, that was back when Anheuser-Busch owned SeaWorld, gave us that, which used to be the old Atlantis restaurant.
For those that are old enough, like myself, can remember.
I remember going there when I was in high school and having dinner, but. So that is now our headquarters, and they gave us money, Anheuser-Busch, to renovate that. But again, to continue on with this, close relationship that we do have with SeaWorld, even though we're not part of SeaWorld, we're not their employees, we have the name incorporated because of our founding fathers for that, but we are a separate 501c3 organization. They do help support us, like obviously with that facility. They give us a small contribution every year to help support our operations. A lot of our funding, though, comes from outside grants and contracts as well. We need to continue to do that as a nonprofit. And obviously, funders help support various programs and the organization as well, too, private donors that we go out and, it's like any nonprofit trying to, knock on doors and know about us and hopefully trying to get better at making people more aware in San Diego of our organization. And I've been told by, even years ago by SDG&E executives, like, who are you guys? You guys are like the best kept secret in San Diego.
Totally.
So we're trying to, improve on those and get out there and get the large corporate sponsorships as well for organizations.
That's awesome.
Pretty neat. I have a question, a personal question. I know like 5 to 10 years ago, Ken Franke on the Outer Limits was catching the cow cod. Was that also through what you're doing?
Yeah, so we were, we kind of got off on there. We didn't even talk about the yellowtail. But just some time ago, we were doing studies on rockfish, trying to understand can we culture them, how that works. And so we went out on the Outer Limits for a number of trips to try to catch cow cod. And that presents some unique challenges in the sense of, one, these fish have internal fertilization different than a sea bass or a halibut or a yellowtail, which are broadcast spawners. So they're actually live bearers. The females spit out little babies ready to go.
Vivivores?
So, yes.
Is that the right?
That's correct.
Yeah.
And so... But also they are caught at deep waters and they have swim bladders. And as people know that fish, sea bass, I mean, the same thing applies with rockfish. We're catching them down 300 feet. You've got to bring them up slowly. They still can't off gas or get rid of the air. So their swim bladders obviously inflate due to the reducing pressure as they come up from the depths. And so we developed implemented pressure chambers for our fish. So we would go out there, catch them, bring them up there, and try to bring them up slow, from 300 feet, maybe 15, not faster than 15 minutes, and then get them into these pressure chambers and recompress them right away, get them back down to depth, and then obviously when we came back into shore, get them on land. And so we had these chambers that were portable. You could keep the pressure in there. The challenge is keeping the pressure, but you also want fresh water and oxygen circulating through that. So
what a challenge.
So we had all that designed out, and we were able to, after about slowly over a week's time, get them to pressure at sea level, and they were fine after that. And then we put them into our tanks, trying to hopefully get them to do their thing in the tanks, and we use some of the old aquariums that were in the Atlantis restaurant that look similar to their habitat in the wild. They have huge rocks in them, and we could control the temperature, keep it cool. It was dark, but we just never, fortunately, we tried that and cow cod. We had some other rockfish, picacho were in there and some other things, and just weren't successful after a number of years trying to get that. So we then ended up ending that program. Yellowtail, I mean, we're still working on yellowtail. That's another one that we hit on earlier. But yellowtail, we've been working on that for a number of years, in part because it's a popular food fish. And so when you get sushi, hamachi around the world, it all comes from cultured yellowtail. There's wild capture fisheries for it, but none of that's used for the Sashimi market. Yes, yeah.
Right.
So we're working on that, and some of you viewers may know as we're in the process of working through a federal permits to maybe be the first organization in this country to do what's called offshore aquaculture. So yellowtail would be the model for that, where we could, in our hatchery, you know, get them to spawn in captivity, very similar to white sea bass. You know, mm-hmm. we can control the temperature. They spawn when the conditions are right. They're broadcast spawners. The eggs float out of the tank.
It's all stuff that's in your wheelhouse.
Yeah, yeah. And then you grow those up, get them the same size, just like the white sea bass grow out pens, and then stock them out in the pens offshore. Get, you know, within hopefully 18 months, less than 2 years, get those fish to a marketable size, and then bring them back in to the market to, you know, compete with, like, foreign imports. I mean, because we do import 91% of the seafood that we consume in this country.
And it's scary because you really don't know what they've been fed in these, beyond third world countries, right?
Yeah, I mean, correct. I mean, there are already in place, you know, regulations and things like that, that what we can use and can't use to feed them. And things are already there. We don't need to create new legislation or new, rules for this. It's already there. And the same thing with our white sea bass. I mean, there's certain things we can do and use. I mean, they're considered food fish, so we're not throwing a bunch of chemicals at them or hormones or anything like that. Those aren't acceptable to the FDA. And so if fish gets sick, you know, you have very little you can use for food fish. But, you know, so the idea is not to, you know,
yeah, don't perhaps, buy
not
yeah,
to go
don't,
that method.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. You know, control what you're stocking in these pens, the densities and the fish, the water quality and the health and the feed, you know. So it's very being proactive on the husbandry side to take care of these.
And it truly would be done no better way than having the United States or, you know, California in this case, like allowing us to do that, right? I mean, that would be the healthiest way for a consumer to purchase.
Yeah, so we would do this actually in federal waters, so it's outside state waters.
Okay.
So federal waters, California already has, unfortunately, legislation that makes it challenging to, almost impossible to do fish in state waters.
No surprise.
Yeah, so we would be working in federal waters, and this is the model kind of around the United States, trying to work in, there's a proposal, I think, for Florida to try to do a similar grow out in a different ocean style pen, but no, we would do this off of Southern California. I'm not sure if it's going to happen off San Diego or potentially Long Beach area, but, you know, there's always multiple users out there. So
sure.
The challenge is, you know, we've got San Diego, huge military presence. So almost every millimeter out there in the ocean off San Diego
is utilized
by the military in particular. And so they've got these designated areas. And so we have to work with them, even figure out what little footprint that we could get out there that wouldn't interfere with their operations. So, you know, we've got a couple of ideas, you know, going places that we're going out there. So that's what we're trying to do with yellowtail. And yeah, the food, the quality, and I mean, yeah, we have regulations, like I said, what we can feed them, what we can do, and where, yeah, that's not the same. And not only that, it's the carbon footprint. I mean, how much fuel are you burning to get a fish halfway around the world? You know,
sure.
They may have more flight miles on it than we have ourselves. Traveling or
kind of crazy.
Anything that reduces our dependency on a foreign brought in thing is a good thing. And I'm excited and hope that it continues the good path and you guys are able to get it through. Hey, we had a great text come through. It said, "Good morning, guys. What a great show. My question is for Mike. Mike, I frequently catch orangemouth corvina in San Diego Bay. Can you explain what some of the differences are between these and the white sea bass? Also, does Hubs do any type of study on corvina since they seem to be such a similar fish? Any ideas on their population growth as compared to sea bass?" That's all from Ralph and Menifee.
Cool. Yeah, so orange mouth corvina, it's been coming up more. I mean, when I was sampling out there, so I've been out in the water for 30 years. I mean, my background's more or less as a fisheries research scientist out on the water. But we'd see, you know, orange mouth corvina, you know, in San Diego Bay, in Mission Bay. I mean, they're all over the place now in certain places. So the difference is with that, I mean, it's in the same family as sea bass. It's a cyanid croaker. And croakers worldwide are popular food fish, and guys should target them if they're going to eat them. I mean, but so the difference is primarily when you look at it, it looks very similar to the juvenile sea bass in that guards, but when you catch them. But in the roof of the mouth, one of the more dead giveaways is the two fangs or vomer, the teeth that are up in there that sit there. So you just open it up and look and see. I mean, the other thing is they don't have, sea bass will have a ridge on their belly that is pronounced, and these guys don't have that.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And so orange mouth or short fin, he may be referring to also, sorry, the short fin corvina too. I haven't seen, I'm trying to think of the orange, and maybe that's what he's confusing with, because I don't know if we really truly have orange mouth corvina.
Never seen one or heard of one.
Short fin corvina is most likely what it is.
Right. And the problem is the short fin corvina do have an orange tint to their mouth, fin, you know, which you know. People know the name orange mouth corvina, which, correct me if I'm wrong, that's the fish that we catch in salt and sea.
That's it.
Exactly.
So
we
know that that name exists, and you catch a short fin, and, well, it's got an orange mouth and fangs. So.
Yeah. And so the short, and why it's called short fin is the pectoral fin on it doesn't extend past the pelvic fin. So the pelvic fins are the ones on the stomach, and obviously when you look at a sea bass, it goes, their pectoral fins go beyond the pelvic fins.
And really they're compressed, like, look on a corvina is compressed from side to side, where a sea bass, white sea bass, is more like a yellowfin croaker, like triangulated and larger at the bottom too. And I mean, it's pretty easy to tell right out of the gate.
Yeah, I remember years ago, again, educating even the fish and game wardens that were working on the docks when I was on the docks to say, hey, here's what, because they don't really see that. I mean, you can look in a book and see a diagram of it or whatever, but to really see one in person. So I would ask them, say, hey, what, you know, as they're walking by, hey, what do you think this is? And, you know, they'll go see that. And I said, no. And so I had to educate them. So they were very thankful in that. And because, yeah, I don't think there's any regulations, as far as I know, on the short fin corvina with regards to the size of that fish. I know there's a general number of fish you can keep in a day, but yeah, so they're definitely seem to increase in numbers. And I even remember even bonefish in
San Diego Bay
increasing. I mean, there was times where I would catch more bonefish than
there's a lot of them in the back bay.
So it's been popular. So
do you think that those come via larvae, via egg? Like, how does that fish from a southern region make it this far?
So we think during these type of warm water years, like we're having right now potentially, that they move up, and then they get confined potentially in these bays, which are naturally warmer than the open ocean. So, you know, I've seen bonefish here, San Diego Bay, Mission Bay,
Newport.
And even Newport, all the way up the coast. And so they're here, and once they probably stay inside these bays and continue to reproduce. Bonefish are kind of unique in that they have what's called leptocephalus larvae. So, like, for a year, they're just like these little worm-looking things, you know, as fish. I mean, our fish in a year look like a sea bass and they're growing up, you know. But
the bonefish,
the challenge.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
so
that's a trip.
Really a challenge, even for culture. I mean, there's certainly been interest across this country to do culture with bonefish.
Sure, people,
especially in Florida. So they've been working on it down there. It's just, it's a little bit of a challenge in culture to try to support that leptocephalus larvae for a year's
growth.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's awesome info. I love this show, Mike.
Oh,
so much fun having you here.
Such great information. Listen, if you want to join us, one open line right now, 213-432-1090. It's all yours, and we're going to be taking that call. Text some more. We've got fish reports coming when we return on the Let's Talk Cook About, the Mightier 1090 ESPN Radio.
Here's John Ireland for Rancho Leonero.
Rancho Leonero was awarded the Certificate of Excellence from TripAdvisor for 4 straight years. Especially interesting, most hotels aren't just hotels, and most people stay in the hotel and go do their activities elsewhere. Rancho Leonero, of course, provides fishing, diving, all activities, all meals, your whole vacation. So the fact that we're so highly rated, we're very proud of it. From picking you up at the airport to dropping you off, literally everything is turnkey from there. We make it as easy as we can for you at the ranch, from your meals to whether you're going to go fishing or diving or just hang out by the pool. When you're coming to Rancho Leonero, you are coming to John Ireland's home. I guarantee the best fishing vacation experience in all of Baja. That's unique. There's nowhere that I could think of to get the same experience that you get in Rancho Leonero. Our new reservation phone number is 800-646-2252, 646-BAJA, and RanchoLeonero.com. It's really unique. It is. We're very proud of it.
Want to take your catch from fresh to superior grade? This is Robbie Gant from AFCO. We developed the tools for the EKGMA process. Circuit Breaker is specially designed to disable the full length of the fish's spinal cord. The memory-resistant wire of AFCO's Circuit Breaker will not bend or kink, even after repeated use. Take your fish care to the next level with Circuit Breaker by AFCO. Available at a dealer near you or check out AFCO.com.
Like Robbie said, take your fish care to the next level with Circuit Breaker by AFCO. Check AFCO.com or your favorite tackle retailer.
This is Captain Brandon Nelson from Lucky Bee Sport Fishing. Our dynamic fishery here on the West Coast is home to some of the most iconic game fish that swim the salty world. We demand tools designed to perform flawlessly and deliver the upper hand in any situation. That's why I use and recommend the all-new G. Loomis IMX Pro Offshore series of rods. It's a full lineup of purpose-built 20 to 80-pound class rods. I have been fortunate enough to be working with G. Loomis on the IMX Pro for some time to help develop the actions we need here on the West Coast. And they nailed it. The G. Loomis multi-taper design technology adds material where the blank is likely to fail and subtracts material where it won't. A seed guide train and Fuji reel seat complement a battle-on grip that offers extreme fatigue-fighting comfort. They have been helping my passengers on Lucky Bee Sport Fishing land some amazing fish, and now they are ready for you. The new G. Loomis IMX Pro Offshore Rod Series at your local Shimano or G. Loomis dealer.
When it comes to fishing rods for saltwater, there's just one name you need to know, CalStar. Take, for example, the Graphiter series. It's a true graphite and fiberglass composite rod, the finest it's ever been built. And for anglers seeking traditional performance, durability, and quality at an affordable price, the CalStar West Coast series of rods and blanks are the ones for you. Their master craftsmen bring decades of rod building experience to every rod they make. So if you want your fishing rods to be truly state-of-the-art, I always recommend CalStar at fine tackle stores everywhere.
This is Captain Tim Ekstrom from the long-range vessel Royal Star. With my partners Randy Toussaint and Brian Sims, we have set the bar for the long-range fishing experience. Spring 8-day, summer 5-day, or a fly-down, fly-back 11-day winter trip, we deliver the highest quality long-range voyage you will find. From our premium RSW fish storage to our top-of-the-line chefs and crew, Royal Star distinguishes itself from all others. Want to grab a spot on the Royal Star? Check us out at RoyalStarSportFishing.com or call Tracy at 619-224-4764.